my, you know, first foray into building wealth was really property based. Obviously, I had a workplace pension because at that time I was an employee, but my focus was on investment property. And it was after about 10 years of doing investment property, and I started to read a lot more about building wealth, and I started to think, oh, actually, all my eggs are really in one basket, because, you know, if we have a big property crash, and we did have one in, you know, 2008, which is around about the time, you know, because I bought my first investment property in 96, it was around about the time I started thinking that I needed to expand my horizons a bit, kind of diversify. So it was then that I started investing a lot more in other asset classes.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, welcome back to the Retire Well, Retire Happy show. I'm your host, Annie Nelson, and today we have a special guest all the way from London. It's Vix Munro. And Vix is an entrepreneur, author, money enthusiast, and eternal optimist. Her background is in accountancy, economics, and pricing, with a career spanning over 30 years. She also holds a master's in economics and has been running her own business for 12 years. Vix is passionate about money, investing, and the economy. Her mission is to help people, or mainly women, create and build wealth and retire rich in every way. She believes we all have the ability to transform our money mindset, rewrite our money story, and become financially empowered. And this can be liberating and life-changing, as well as fun. A little bit of background, Vix was born and raised in New Zealand, arriving in London at the age of 23 with only £30 in her pocket, but has not looked back since. And she doesn't like sitting still. She loves to travel, to see, taste, and try new things. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for the welcome.
It's a mighty big lifespan you have, a career of over 30 years. So how did you end up over there and becoming successful with only £30 starting?
Yeah, well, obviously, as you heard, I hail from New Zealand. I was 23 when I left. I came here thinking I was coming for a 1 or 2 year working holiday, and I'm still here in the UK, and it's over 30 years later. So I'm showing my age, definitely. Part of the reason I only arrived with £30 was because I went backpacking in Thailand and Malaysia first, and I had money saved for that, but we spent a lot more money than we thought we would, and also bought things like cameras and ended up getting flights instead of, you know, these overnight buses. So by the time I got here, I had £30 in my pocket. Well, we were really lucky because the person I was traveling with knew someone in London, and we were able to sleep on that person's floor. And we had those, you know, what we used to have in those days, those roll mats attached to our backpack. So we just slept on their floor, on our roll mat and our sleeping bags. And we were able to do that for a month. And because I'd studied accountancy, I was able to get a job immediately in London in a bank. It was a Japanese bank called Daiwa, and earn money. It was good money compared to what you could earn in New Zealand at the time when you took into account the exchange rate. Whereas for young people coming now, that's not quite the same anymore because, you know, the exchange rate's changed. I think, you know, if I go and get my nails done or my hair cut, I quite often get, you know, a young woman doing it who's talking about, oh, it's great going to Australia and you can earn really good money there. But, you know, my day, it was almost, you know, my view when I left was that the streets of London are paved with gold. Well, they weren't quite, but, you know, the amount of money I could earn at the time seemed huge compared to back in New Zealand. I mean, one of the things, I suppose, about my money story, which has had a big impact for me, is that my mother died when I was a child. So I was 11 at the time. And as a result of that, I kind of took away we're here for a good time, not a long time attitude. So I was a bit, I became a bit of a spender in my 20s. So I didn't actually do that much good money-wise in my 20s at all, apart from it was all spent. You know, I loved to travel. I would travel all the time. And it wasn't really until I got into my 30s that I kind of had a change of heart. And also when I got to the same age that my mother was, when she died, which was like 35, I thought, actually, you know, I might last a while. So my first foray into building wealth was, well, first of all, I bought my own property. I bought a flat. Obviously, in London, buying a house is very expensive, whereas I'm sure where you are and where I come from in New Zealand, it was all focused on buying a house. I bought a flat, and that was in 1996. And it was actually a really good time to buy because, you know, house prices had dropped. It was kind of the bottom. I didn't know it was going to be the bottom, but I was very lucky. And 3 years later, that flat had increased quite a lot in value. Now, I always had, you know, a relatively well-paid job. I mean, you know, not hugely well-paid, but, you know, I had money to do things and I could afford to buy a flat. And so, as I said, 3 years later, that had increased in value. And I remortgaged and took some more equity out of that flat and used that as a deposit on my first investment property. So I was lucky to be able to do that, you know, 3 years later. And then, you know, house prices were still rising. You know, I also had changed job. My income was going up. And I was really focused on investment property. So I was remortgaging then both the flat I owned and lived in, and the investment property, and kind of remortgaging and buying more properties. I also moved city. Actually, I was living in London and I moved to Brighton. And rather than sell the flat I was in to buy a new one in Brighton, I then just changed that to investment mortgage, what they call a buy-to-let mortgage here, and then bought a new property when I moved. So my, you know, first foray into building wealth was really property-based. Obviously, I had a workplace pension because at that time I was an employee, but my focus was on investment property. And it was after about 10 years of doing investment property, and I started to read a lot more about building wealth, and I started to think, oh, actually, all my eggs are really in one basket because, you know, if we have a big property crash, and we did have one in, you know, 2008, which is around about the time, you know, because I bought my first investment property in 96. It was around about the time I started thinking that I needed to expand my horizons a bit, kind of diversify. So it was then that I started investing a lot more in other asset classes. In the last like 10 or so years, I invested a lot more in the stock market. And nowadays, I also invest like in startups because there's a lot of, you know, tax advantages in investing in startups, particularly if they do well. In the UK, you know, you pretty much get, they have this thing called the Enterprise Investment Scheme, where if organization is registered for that, you get 30% back and then you don't have to pay capital gains tax at all when you sell those shares. And then I've kind of invested a lot more in the stock market, also in commodities, particularly precious metals, gold and silver. And I invest in gold and silver both physically, which is stored in a vault in Switzerland, but also through ETFs, exchange traded funds, as they're called. And, you know, in the last 3 years, I've also got into this new asset class, cryptocurrency, and I particularly focused on Bitcoin. But yeah, I'm a much more diversified now. But even so, because I got into property early, and it's increased a lot in value. More than 50% of my net worth is property equity.
Yeah. Property is probably coming from, I don't know about New Zealand's compared to Australians, but that seems to be where we start, is in property. It's something probably from our parents, I suppose, but that seems to be the natural way to start in Australia too, is through property. But you're very lucky or savvy that you got in when you did, but gave yourself that good solid base.
Yeah, and in many ways my timing was very good. As I said, that I bought my first flat for myself in 1996. And compared to my four sisters back in New Zealand, and I was number two, they had all bought property by then. So I started a little bit late compared to them, mainly because, you know, I was the one that had come overseas and I spent every penny traveling. You know, I've been to loads of countries and I just love to travel, whereas, you know, they'd focus on building a home. But once I started, I kind of moved pretty quickly. But timing, you know, I was lucky in many respects. Timing had a lot to do with that. But also I was driven. I, you know, it was starting to become common then. Well, not common, but it was starting to become a thing then that, you know, Joe Blogs on the street could have a property portfolio. Now, my property portfolio isn't huge, but, you know, it's enough that, you know, I have a lot of equity in property now.
It's marvellous that you've been able to set yourself up, so to speak, and you look as though you've still got a few years left in you yet before you have to or need to retire. The trick about diversifying is spreading your eggs around, and it seems like you recognise that and have done that. Is there any particular formula that you have used with working out how far to spread your eggs?
Well, I think I started, I mean, I'm not sure about Australia, but, you know, it used to be that financial advisors would focus very much on equities and bonds. And, you know, I remember from having, you know, when I was working as an employee and having a company pension, it was kind of, well, you're young, put it all in equities. You don't really start needing to move to, you know, so much to bonds until you're a bit older. So I kind of took their advice initially. And then I think when I started kind of investing a bit more myself in equities, I was very much about, my initial focus after property was really equities, and I was very much about geographical diversification, because I even felt that the financial advisors that I'd spoken to were very much about UK, Europe. You know, it was those types of, you know, UK, buying to UK equities or European equities or US really. I also studied economics, so I have a background in economics, so I'm also quite interested in the economy, and I would see, you know, the emerging markets doing well. So I diversified quite a lot early on as well, and my, you know, some of my pension pots have done particularly well. And I think I'm naturally a risk taker, so I would take a kind of a higher risk approach. And so, you know, for one company, when I moved that pension, and I kept it in their company pension for quite a long time before I took my control and moved it myself, it had actually gone up a lot more. I'd gone up quite a lot, and actually a lot more than some of my colleagues who'd also been invested in that, you know, through that company pension for the same amount of time. So I think I'd gone into higher risk equity and they had performed well. So I did focus quite a bit on the emerging markets. And interestingly, I'm kind of looking at that again now, because I think, you know, when we look at where we are in the world now, I think emerging markets, and I think India in particular, has a huge amount of potential. And so I am kind of looking at that again now. So I did initially focus on equities. I didn't go into bonds. I mean, I think a little bit within my company pension, but any investing I've done for myself is not in bonds, mainly because, as I said, I take a higher risk approach. I appreciate that the advice is to move into bonds as you get older. And I suppose I'm probably, you know, in my 50s, so I'm probably considered to be in that category, but I'm also not looking at retiring, you know, well, it's 67 here in the UK for me. I know it's still 65 in New Zealand, but is it still 65 in Australia as well?
I think it's changing. It's 66 and going up to 67.
Yeah, 60. So, you know, I've still got quite a few years left of working. So, yeah, I'm not moving really into bonds yet. Mm. I still think I've got enough time. And also when I think about retirement, I mean, retirement has changed. It's not longer you turn 65, 66 or 67, you get the state pension, a nice workplace pension. I mean, I love what I do. So I think I'll be doing this for a long time in some kind of form. And it'll be more kind of a blended retirement, I suppose, is what I like to call it. A bit of, you know, a bit more free time. Because I also want to be able to do more things that I love to do, you know, maybe a passion project or travel a lot more. I do expect to still be doing some form of work.
Mm. It was interesting too, you also mentioned startup companies, so that would be in the high risk category too, I imagine.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And the kind of startups I'm involved in are the ones that, you know, so the kind of things I've invested in, what I call kind of innovative and kind of emerging trends, really. So the ones I've invested in recently are like medical cannabis, artificial intelligence, so robotics, cybersecurity, plant-based. So a lot of these startups are those types of companies. So I kind of think they're companies that I believe are very innovative and they represent the way that things are going to be in the future. Like I think cybersecurity is a big issue now. And so any company or organization that can address the gaps that we have now will do well in the future. So that's an area I particularly focus on. Mm. But yeah, you're right, they're high risk. And cryptocurrency. I'm also in cryptocurrency.
Was that hard to wrap your head around?
I got involved in 2017 so I've been in it for around 3 years now. And that was when you'll recall, well, maybe it was late 2016, early 2017, when the prices really started increasing a lot. I was like, oh, I need to find out about this. And I find it really fascinating. And I'm now a big Bitcoin advocate. I mean, I personally think that Bitcoin is potentially the biggest opportunity of our lifetime. That's my personal view. And I think if you want to look at risk-reward ratio, the potential rewards are huge. And yes, there is a risk, but then every investment has a risk. But as you know, it's different levels of risk. And I think it's something that, it's my personal view, everyone should have, say, 1% in their portfolio because the potential rewards are large. But 1% isn't that is not taking that huge risk, is it? Because 1% in the general sense of things isn't huge. Mm. So, and I think the risk reward ratio is large, but it's also something that because it's a new asset class that people need to, you know, learn about and understand rather than kind of going blinding. So I have spent quite a lot of time learning about it and understanding about it. And I'm a big advocate, particularly Bitcoin. I think it's been used as a store of value, particularly this year. And this year, 2020, we've seen the first publicly listed companies and invest a large amount of monies from their treasury reserves in Bitcoin. So the first company, MicroStrategy, they're called, I think they invested around $450 million in Bitcoin earlier this year. And they're listed on the NASDAQ stock exchange, on the NASDAQ. And yeah, that's a lot of money. And since then, a couple of other corporates have followed. And I always think when one goes, others follow. And even Elon Musk has been tweeting a bit recently about, you know, should he invest or should they, as in Tesla, invest some of their treasury reserves in Bitcoin as well. Mm. So I think it's something that a lot of people are looking into. But, you know, anyone who wants to think about it does need to do their own due diligence.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing a bit about your investment diversification, and it seems as though you are well diversified now, having first started in property. So would you like to now just talk us a bit about money mindset and what does it look like to you?
Well, I think the whole thing about money mindset, it's our subconscious beliefs, you know, about money. And I think, you know, we all have limiting beliefs about money, whether it's about the amount of money that we could potentially earn. That's something I see a lot, actually, particularly for women. It's like, well, I could never earn that much money. You know, so we place these limits on ourselves. And it's also things about, you know, what we think about money. You know, rich people are greedy, or you can't be rich and happy. I mean, there's so many beliefs that we have that come from our childhood and or come from our early days and are really subconscious. And you know, my view is that, you know, in order, the best financial strategies will only take you so far in life, you know, because you also need a strong money mindset and they go hand in hand. And where they meet, that's where the magic happens. And I think money mindset is something that, you know, we need to be working on continually. It's not just something that you can just resolve by thinking about it. It's like you chip away at these limiting beliefs. It's like, you know, any kind of limiting belief, you know, these ones are related to money. But you need to chip away at them over time and deal with them. But, yeah, our money mindset is very important. It's some people's, you know, it's the emotional side of money as opposed to the practical side of money. And some people say, you know, it's 80% emotion and 20% practical. I think it's slightly different than that, maybe a bit less emotional. But, you know, it depends on the person. It's very variable.
Mm. So you have your own business now. Can you tell us about that and tell us about how you are working with other women?
Yeah, I actually have three businesses. So I have a property investment business. I actually have a limited company for that. Also my economics business. So that's kind of economics consultancy. But my new business is called Money Badassery. It's really about helping women step into their financial power and become money savvy in life and in business. And one of my particular focuses is on retiring rich. And because I think it's something that as women, you know, we don't think about, you know, and we're also underrepresented. You know, we talk about there being a wage gap, but there's also an investment gap. More men invest than women, and more men have higher amounts of money in their pension pots than women do, yet we live longer. So it's really important for us to think about how we're going to fund our lifestyles in the future. And, you know, if retirement is 67 here in the UK, I mean, it's very light, and it's quite likely that you could live for another 30 years, and you've got to somehow fund that. And the state pension, particularly in the UK, I mean, theoretically, we're all entitled to it, but it's effectively a Ponzi scheme. You know, the current pensioners are being paid from national insurance contributions that we make today. You know, they're not earmarked for us in the future. So how are they going to be funded in the future? So we really need to think about funding our own retirement and the kind of lifestyle we want. So a lot of my work is really about that. It's about, you know, having a strategy. It's about having a vision for what your life is going to look like in the future. And then making a plan. And the other thing is, you know, when I talk about retiring rich, but rich means different things to different people. It doesn't mean having large amounts of money. You know, it means, it's a bit like the word wealth as well, isn't it? Like, what does wealth mean? You know, I talk a lot about financial wealth, so that's money, but there's also time wealth, so freedom. What else is there? Emotional wealth or physical wealth, so that's health. Spiritual wealth, spirituality. And different people want different things. I mean, if you're happy living a simple life and want to be able to have a holiday once a year, that's fantastic. You know, I mean, the fact is easier for you. You might be able to retire earlier because you don't need to put away so much money. But, you know, as I said, I love to travel. I'm used to traveling a lot. And I know that for me, I want to sustain or maintain that lifestyle in the future. So I need to make sure that I put away enough money in order to fund that. So I focus a lot on what I call retiring rich, and yours is retire well, retire happy. It's effectively the same thing, really. It's having the retirement or the lifestyle that you want in the future and making sure it happens, but not at the expense of kind of sacrificing everything now. Because a lot of people have this kind of attitude, you either spend now and, you know, hope for the best in the future, or you're really frugal now and then put away all your pennies for the future. I try and have a balance it. So, you know, everything is planned that you have enough money to do the things that you need to do and that are really important to you now, knowing that you're putting away enough money for the future. My whole strategy is on that. It's about having a vision, having a plan, and then looking at what you need to do to achieve that plan. So in terms of investment, and as you know, it's all about investing in assets, whether that be property or equities, or whatever it is that you decide to invest in. But I certainly advocate having a diversified portfolio for the future.
Well, thanks very much for sharing your philosophy. But it is important for women to reach out to women and get the message across, because we don't know what's going to happen in the future. And in the past, I think we've relied heavily on the male partner to provide for the women. But sometimes it doesn't always work out, and a lot of times we put our life on hold and supported the other person, and we may end up coming unstuck towards the end. And like you said, the women haven't been investing, and it's been more male-focused, that area. So it's good that you are promoting women and promoting that they improve their investing abilities. So where would anyone go to if they wanted to find out more about you? Where would they find you?
Okay, so I hang out on Facebook a lot. I have a Facebook page called Money Badassery, and I also have a free Facebook group for women, which is called the Money Badass Community. And my website is www.moneybadassery.com. I'm also on LinkedIn as Fix Munro and also on Instagram as Moneybadassery as well.
Okay.
But Facebook is where I hang out the most.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for sharing your story and being so inspiring, and congratulations for what you have achieved over there in London.
Well, thank you very much. It's been great to come on and talk with you today.
Thank you. We've been listening to Vix Munro, a Kiwi that's happily working away and creating wealth over in London. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.